European Union leaders started a year-end two-day meeting in Brussels Thursday and Friday to try and steer Europe out of the sovereign debt crisis that has festered for more than a year. The problem was thought to have been largely dealt with after Greece was bailed out in May, but then Ireland needed similar help last month. There are persistent fears that other members of the 16 nations that use the euro, including Portugal and Spain, are under threat. Moves to buy up bad debt by the European Central Bank and the creation of a stability fund have not ended the crisis. As the U.S. continues to grapple with its own financial and debt crisis, what lessons are there for America? What is at stake for the U.S. in Europe's ongoing debt crisis? Eric Westervelt, one of NPR's Europe correspondents, sat down in a Berlin restaurant over coffee and apple strudel with former U.S. Ambassador to Germany John Kornblum and Professor Erwin Collier of the Free University's JFK Institute to discuss those issues.
First, just a little bit of overview. I mean, we know the dance that goes on here. The markets signal that a country's, you know, sovereign debt is starting to eat away, and they're starting to stagger under mounting debt. These countries insist that they don't need a bailout. Then, of course, the markets pressure them, and they realize it. In fact, they do. First, Greece, $150 billion EU-IMF bailout in May. That was going to be the only one, just one bailout. We'll come up with a mechanism in case there's another crisis out. But then Ireland last month, $112 billion lifeline. Now serious fears. Portugal is up next. Then Spain, Europe's fourth largest economy, as well as Italy, even Belgium. They're all facing pressure. This could strain the eurozone to the breaking point, some are saying. And clearly the EU's piecemeal sort of drawn out country-by-country bailouts aren't working. They're not calming the markets. So first off, this crisis is showing no sign of abating. Is this the growing pains of an 11-year-old currency, John Kornblum, or is it a more fundamental sort of existential crisis for the euro?
I think it's gone beyond growing pains into, in fact, uncovering some of the problems, many of which were inherent in the euro to begin with, the different size, the different productivity of economies. Others have come through the economic crisis. Some others have come through the spread of worldwide networks. Now the so-called speculators, the market, have very fast information. They follow these things. What you're seeing here is a sort of double level of lack of trust. One, they don't trust the European countries to be able to come up with a solution. But even more so, secondly, they don't believe that the European countries can deal with the imbalances which caused the problems to begin with.
And that lack of trust just seems to compound itself and sort of feed on itself.
That's right. And then when a country like Ireland says, no, we don't need it, we'll withstand the market, then the market says, okay, let's give them a try. And then they end up, in fact, giving in.
Professor Erwin Collier, growing pains or a more fundamental, the euro is about to die, existential crisis?
Well, I think there are definite tragic flaws that the euro has in its governance mechanism. The idea that they could get one treaty down and get everything right for all foreseeable circumstances. Major shocks have occurred in the global economy. Everyone is surprised. And now the sorts of governance mechanisms that are needed would require treaties with unanimity. And, you know, all I can think of is in the United States Senate, if we had to have 100 senators vote to kill a filibuster, nothing would happen. And I think we're in this difficult position in Europe. It's very hard to imagine the political economy of major changes in the treaties that everyone would sign off on.
Right. Americans might think it's tough to get reforms with a divided Congress. You're saying think about it with a divided 27 European Union states.
Exactly. Instead of a 60%, you have a 100% hurdle to jump to get everybody signing off. When there are also not only different interests, there are different philosophies of governance. The Germans like, in particular, the idea of government by rules. So any opportunity for discretionary policy is looked at as potential abuse rather than as the needed flexibility in emergency situations.
Americans might think, blah, 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 the euro crisis, is it really relevant to my life? Why should I care? And U.S. banks, in fact, have little direct exposure to Europe's financial problems threatening these economically weakest European nations. So, Erwin Collier, why should Americans care about this debt crisis overseas?
Well, because the United States is plugged into that world economy, and the United States is suffering from its own serious imbalances. Long-term, the trade deficits have to be taken care of, and that requires a depreciation in what we call the real exchange rate, the relative price of U.S. exports on international markets. When uncertainty occurs somewhere in international financial markets, invariably we see a increase in the value of the dollar as wealth holders try to seek that safe haven. So that's goes in the opposite direction. It makes our goods more expensive and makes it harder for us to solve the imbalance.
Can I make the case for why a family in Iowa should care about the euro crisis?
There is no longer any artificial separation among economies. If you think of the financial crisis, it began perhaps with mortgage problems in the United States, but it spread like wildfire across the world. Well, it's the other way around, too. If China's currency is undervalued, that means that lots of Chinese goods come to the United States. It means the American balance of payments is in difficulty. If, on the other hand, Europe has many has instabilities, as we've been talking about, if there's, in fact, even a bigger crisis, that will mean that Europe will not be buying American products. That will mean that European banks and European governments will be less stable. And that is all connected together right now. And the one thing that I think hasn't been totally understood is how interconnected we all are.
Looking at America's debt problem, America now faces an incredible debt and deficit problem. I think the U.S. debt is now approaching $14 trillion. What lessons, if any, are there for America's debt woes, Professor Collier?
Well, there are some who would argue that, in fact, if there's no pain, there's no gain. You have to show that you're willing to inflict pain on yourself now to be credible about the pain you expect later generations to bear to bring things back into balance. So in that sense, the United States is in a position like several of the weaker European economies now, who are finding themselves faced with very bad choices about trying to tighten their fiscal houses when in fact they are at less than full employment.
Everyone likes to avoid pain in Europe and the United States when it comes to tough decisions, tough choices, John Kornblum.
But the interesting thing is, when one says Europeans aren't taking the hard choices, the fact is that you're now essentially dealing with two Europes. You have the Northern Europe sort of gathered around Germany. They've all been taking the hard choices for the last 5 years already. And if you take countries like Finland and Sweden and Norway, they're in actually quite good economic shape, as is Germany. And you take then the Southern European countries, who have not been making those choices, but at the same time have economies which have a very hard time keeping up with the standards of the German economy, you see that one of the dangers to all of us over the long term is that you might have a Europe that really is of two speeds, and all that will do is lead to more uncertainty, more instability, and more debate about what the economic future is going to be, which will feed the markets again.
We've seen ordinary people, John Kornblum, take to the streets occasionally violently across Europe. Many people are angry. They feel betrayed. Why should taxpayers in Europe or the U.S. really foot the bill for overextended banks, greedy bankers, or feckless politicians who haven't done enough to solve this crisis? Do some of these protesters have a point?
Well, a lot of this is true. There are overpaid bankers. There are also people who need more social services. But the fact is that part of what we're seeing here is not very different than the same kind of very painful readjustment that the United States had to go through in the last 2 or 3 years. We said for a long time we were living beyond our means, and we in the United States are now finding out that was true. Well, the same thing is true for Europe. Europe's been living beyond its means for 30 years, been spending money on different things than we do. They spend it more on social welfare than on consumption, but they've still been spending lots of money. And now the combination of the financial crisis and the difficulties with the euro has shown Europeans, just like it's showing the United States, that there's going to be, unfortunately, quite an effect on standard of living in years to come, and people don't like that.
What about the question of the bond markets are obviously extremely reluctant to take some of the pain on their shoulder. Isn't that patently unfair?
Well, I think that was the big policy mistake that the Irish government made, when the Irish government said, we are going to make sure that the people who lend money to our banks get back every penny that they've put in, that was making a commitment that the Irish taxpayer could not conceivably satisfy. That was a commitment that could not be satisfied. And so this issue of insolvency for Ireland really has everything to do with the fact that they just did not recognize this up front. That was a very bad policy choice of the Irish government.
John, there was some American skepticism about the euro when it was first conceived. But a policy right now of saying, I told you so, doesn't really get you very far. So I'm wondering what the U.S. policymakers that were skeptical of it can do now that is constructive.
Well, you're right, it doesn't get you very far. Senior American officials in those years, by the way, a lot of senior European officials too, said that a crisis like this would happen if the conditions made it possible, and unfortunately the conditions have. I think one of the things that we've seen really since the crisis started 2 or 3 years ago has been a very sort of national approach to these things and not as much cooperative action. If you take the question of financial market reform, for example, the United States has pushed through a package, Europe is still fighting about a package, but there hasn't been that much coordination on what the package ought to be. So I think the lesson for everyone is in the years to come, and it is going to be years to come before this is all sorted out, is that the more that one can coordinate actions and move in the same direction, the better off you are.
Well said. We've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else to add? Erwin, more strudel. More strudel.
No more strudel.
The whole thing's a strudel.
The whole thing's a strudel. Right. Thank you very much, both of you.
It's been a pleasure.